Iran reiterates its opposition to the presence of foreign forces in the Caucasus, saying it only makes regional conditions more complicated. Brazil President-elect Lula da Silva urges peace and unity after vote, saying he will govern for all Brazilians and not just those who voted for him. And the death toll from the tropical storm in the Philippines hits 98, with over 60 people missing and about 70 others injured. Hello and welcome from the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Thank you for joining us. Iran's foreign minister says the Islamic Republic always continues its efforts to solve the problem between neighboring Azerbaijan and Armenia, adding that regional mechanisms can help resolve the conflict. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark in a phone call with his Azeri counterpart, Jehun Bayramov. He said the dispute in the Caucasus can be settled at 3+3 meetings. He was referring to a format which will bring together Iran, Turkey, and Russia, as well as three Caucasian countries of Azerbaijan, Armenia, and Georgia. The top Iranian diplomat said Tehran is opposed to the deployment of foreign forces to the Caucasus, as it only makes regional conditions more complicated. The Azeri foreign minister, for his part, said Azerbaijan is also against the presence of foreign forces. Bayramov hailed Iran's efforts to help bring stability and peace in the region. Azerbaijan and Armenia have been engaged in a decades-long dispute over Nagorno-Karabakh region. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says security is a red line for both his government and the people of the Islamic Republic. Raisi underlined that Iran will never, ever allow the enemy's conspiracy to disrupt security to materialize. He then touched upon people's demonstrations to condemn a recent terror attack on a holy shrine in the southern city of Shiraz. He noted the rallies not only demonstrate the will to firmly deal with terrorists, but also ensure national security. The president said the terrorist attack was part of the enemy's plan to create insecurity and disrupt people's lives by provoking unrest. Raisi reiterated that public hatred of terrorists and rioters have increased, urging authorities to counter the enemy's plots. The UN has held a two-day meeting on counterterrorism in India. The purpose was to help bring more information on how terrorists operate and to prevent terrorist acts from occurring. There was no mention of Iran, though, which has been a victim of terrorism. And ironically, the U.S. now wants to hold a UN meeting on Iran over the recent riots occurring in the country.
A special meeting has been held by the UN, titled UN Security Council Counterterrorism. The focus was on technology and the rapid rise in digitization, the use of new and emerging technologies to counter terrorism. In the meeting, the UN cited the important roles that victims and their networks can play in countering terrorism, and to pay tribute to India and how it was a terrorism victim back in 2008.
Excellencies, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, let me extend a warm welcome to all of you in Mumbai, the financial capital of India, for attending this soft opening of the special meeting of the Counter-Terrorism Committee of the Security Council, as well as the informal briefing on countering the financing of terrorism in national and regional context.
Yet there was one country that was not mentioned, one which has been a victim of terrorism, one which was a victim of a terrorist attack just the day before, namely the Islamic Republic of Iran. The U.S. representative at the UN, Chris Liu, said things like, "Today was a powerful reminder that this is really about people's lives." He also said, "We send our sympathies to the Indian people, we stand in solidarity with them, and we are committed to ensuring that the perpetrators of this horrific attack are brought to justice." But no mention of Iran, especially since it lost 13 lives due to a terrorist attack, or the over 17,000 lives that it lost due to the MKO terrorist cult. Not that Iran was looking for sympathy from the U.S. After all, Iran's top intelligence bodies issued a joint statement just yesterday pointing to the major role of foreign intelligence agencies, especially the CIA, in orchestrating the violent riots in Iran in the past weeks. The announcement said intelligence evidence shows that the CIA had devised an extensive plan with the cooperation of allied spy services and reactionary proxies before the start of the unrest to initiate a nationwide chaos with the aim of committing crimes against the great Iranian nation. In short, the intelligence ministries said the CIA played the main role while closely cooperating with the spy agencies of the UK, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. This should not come as a surprise, especially since the U.S. has executed color revolutions. In short, exporting wars, launching color revolutions, fomenting extremist ideologies, and promoting economic instability, especially through sanctions, are just some of the actions by the U.S. which has resulted in bloodshed and turmoil around the world. Some of those countries include Cuba, Ukraine, Syria, Iran, and Venezuela. Here is a man who has openly advocated for support for these rioters and who has said that the U.S. has been involved in U.S. regime change operations. Former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton.
I disagree with that. As somebody who has helped plan coup d'etat,
yeah,
not here, but, you know, other places, it takes a lot of work. And that's not what he did. It was just stumbling around from one idea to another. Ultimately, he did unleash the rioters at the Capitol. As to that, there's no doubt.
But Iran has been one of the biggest victims of terrorism. Deputy Chief of Iran's Judiciary and head of the country's human rights headquarters, Kazem Gharibdi, has blamed Western countries for their double standard policies on terrorism and described his nation as the biggest victim of terrorism. He said on the one hand, they accuse Iran of violating human rights, but on the other, they martyr 17,000 innocent Iranian citizens through terrorism or violate the rights of millions of Iranians through the imposition of unilateral sanctions and jeopardize their right to life.
To say that Iran has been a victim of terrorism is an understatement. The MKUltra terrorist entity has killed over 17,000 Iranians throughout decades. Other incidents involve the twin terrorist attacks on Iran's parliament building and the mausoleum of Imam Khomeini. And just a few days ago, a mass shooting claimed the lives of 13 worshippers at a shrine. Yet the U.S. and many Western countries have refused to condemn the terrorist incident.
The U.S. administration and its allies are now looking to convene an informal private meeting of the U.N. Security Council on recent Iranian riots as an attempt to advance their political agenda. Imagine that, the ones committing instability in Iran to then discuss Iran's domestic affairs, among them the recent violent riots. The Iranian reaction has been swift. Iran's permanent mission to the U.N. said, given the hypocrisy and the use of double standards and selective practice of human rights, we regard American claims in support of Iranian women to be deceptive and lacking in good faith. He also stressed that based on reports by Iran's intelligence community, the U.S. itself was the main suspect behind the recent riots in Iran. And to make the situation even more hypocritical, according to a note outlining the events, it said it's the U.S. and Albania which will hold the informal U.N. Security Council gathering to happen on Wednesday. Of all countries, Albania, which has for years hosted anti-Iran terrorists in collusion with the U.S., the MKO, the same terrorist cult which the U.S. named as a terrorist entity once, but then took that label away. Albania does not only host this terrorist cult, but it has turned its country into a hub of interference by the terrorist group and countries hostile to Iran. It enjoys freedom of activity, even after being delisted by the European Union and the U.S. in 2009 and 2012, respectively, of the terrorist label. So it came as no surprise that the MKO terrorist cult was also actively involved in the recent riots in Iran. The findings of Iran's top intelligence body said that 49 MKO terrorists have been arrested. The terrorists were responsible for spreading fake news, instructing rioters to organize acts of terror and destruction, to direct slogans, and to be present on the streets to damage public property. This was in addition to the 77 members of anti-Iran terrorist groups that had also been arrested in the Iraqi Kurdistan region. Five members of the Takfiri terrorist groups were also arrested in possession of 36 kilograms of explosives that were to be used to carry out bombings and gatherings. The ministry has further announced that 92 people affiliated with the former U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime had been arrested. It added that 9 nationals from Germany, Poland, Italy, France, the Netherlands, and Sweden were also arrested during the riots. Iranian intelligence ministry said a significant number of pistols, various types of machine guns and cartridges, as well as shotguns and ammunition were also seized. So it is quite hypocritical that the U.S. and its European allies impose sanctions on Iran for what they claim is a heavy-handed crackdown on violent protesters, and then move to convene a UN session on how to ratchet up further pressure on the Iranian government. Hypocritical also, since the U.S. and these European countries have all been doing the same to their own population, especially the U.S.
Daesh terrorist attack on worshippers in Shiraz has drawn reactions in Afghanistan, where a deadly attack on an education center in Kabul is still fresh in minds. Afghan people are expressing sympathy for Iranians, stressing the need for Islamic unity in the face of terrorism. We have a report from Kabul.
Wednesday's terror attack on Shah Cheragh Holy Shrine in Iran's city of Shiraz has saddened Iranians as well as many people around the globe. Among them, Afghans who have been bearing the brunt of blind terror attacks for years say the attack opened their old wounds. They say the tragic terror attack touched their hearts, and they share the grief of Iranian people.
I express my condolences to all Iranians, particularly those who live in Shiraz, for their losses in the terrorist attack on Shah Cheragh Shrine. I was shocked and saddened that innocent worshippers were killed there. I also express my sympathy with families of victims. Iran has not been only our neighboring country and a friend of Afghanistan, but also a second home for we Afghans.
Indeed, it was a horrific and exhausting attack. We strongly condemn it. We Afghans can feel how terrifying such attacks can be. Of course, the attack on innocent people saddened all informed and civilized people. I hope the perpetrators and organizers of the attack are brought to justice and punished.
Afghan experts and activists stress the need for global unity, especially among Muslims, against terror acts. They believe the enemies of Islam and Muslims try to destabilize the region by sowing discord among its inhabitants.
The important point about the terror attack in Iran is that some countries who claim to be superpowers, and we know them as arrogant, try to protect their hegemony in any way possible. One of their evil deeds has been plotting religious wars. In my opinion, the Shiraz attack was one of such conspiracies. I believe the Iranian people and all Muslims should be vigilant and informed, especially in the current situation.
The enemies of humanity and Muslims and the Takfiri groups are behind deadly attacks on Islamic sites. We Muslims should stand by each other in the face of such conspiracies, whether in Afghanistan or Iran, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen or Egypt. We should support each other at times when others are just watching us suffer and even rub salt into our wounds.
At least 13 people, including 2 children, were killed after a gunman opened fire on pilgrims at the Holy Shrine in Shiraz. Dozens of others were also wounded. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility for the attack. Many Afghans consider Iran as their second home. Today, people here express sympathy for Iranians, saying they stand with the neighboring nation of Iran. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
In Brazil, President-elect Lula da Silva calls for peace and unity after he defeated incumbent Jair Bolsonaro in the presidential runoff. Addressing his supporters in Sao Paulo, Lula said he will govern for all Brazilians and not just those who voted for him. The newly elected president said his win is a victory for a democratic movement above the interests of parties and ideologies. Lula also called for the resumption of dialogue with the country's legislature and judiciary. The 77-year-old also sought fair global investment and trade, saying Brazil is back on world stage. The veteran leftist leader makes a dramatic comeback with a narrow poll victory. Official results show he secured 50.9% of the votes compared to 49.1% for Bolsonaro. A major tropical storm is hammering the Philippines, leaving serious material damage and claiming lives. Storm Nalgae has now veered toward the northern Philippines. Heavy rains triggered by the storm have inundated rice fields and houses in two northern provinces. The storm first hit the south, where it generated big waves and forced thousands to evacuate their homes. So far, around 100 people have died, nearly 70 injured, and over 60 others are missing due to the extreme weather across the country. Moscow says it has recovered the wreckage of drones used to attack Russian ships in Crimea. The Russian Defense Ministry says it has analyzed the debris and found out that the unmanned aerial vehicles were equipped with Canadian-made navigation module. Russia says the drones used the safe zone of a grain corridor and could have been launched from a civilian ship. Moscow accuses Ukraine of attacking the Russian fleet with 16 drones early on Saturday. Russia also says British Navy specialists had helped coordinate what it called a terrorist attack, a claim London denies. Meanwhile, Ukraine claims Russia itself may have set off the explosions to find a pretext to pull out of a UN-brokered grain export deal. And with that, we'll come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
European countries are very naive to believe that there could be a united front with Washington. Recent developments in Europe, including energy crisis as well as Ukraine crisis, show that Europe's submission to the US dictates has nothing for this continent except humiliation and suffering. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Global Times wrote, a Washington Post report recently entitled European Allies Worry US Could Dial Back Support for Ukraine said that US allies in Europe are increasingly concerned that the united front of the West against Russia's operation in Ukraine could quickly unravel if Republicans are victorious in next month's midterm elections. According to a poll from Morning Consult released recently, only 29% of Republican respondents say they think Washington has a responsibility to assist Kiev. House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy warned on October 18th that Republicans will not write a blank check for Ukraine if they win back the House majority. Judging from the current situation, the Democrats will lose the majority of the House of Representatives. Lu Xiang, an expert on international relations at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, told the Global Times. Lu said that if the Republicans win a majority in the House of Representatives in the November 8 midterms, there will be an evident adjustment of Washington's policy toward Ukraine. And after the midterm election, U.S. aid to Ukraine will pare back or be heavily reduced. The frequent change in U.S. foreign policy is increasing the evidence to the international community. The fundamental reason lies in the structural contradictions of the U.S. political system. The two parties represent different interest groups, and each election is essentially a change in the dominant interest group, noted Liu. Such a political system can sometimes work as a correction mechanism. However, with the relative decline of the U.S., all-round deep-rooted contradictions in fields such as the economy, politics, and cultural identity have been exposed, and it is difficult for the U.S. to devote sufficient resources to support its global hegemony, which makes it difficult for the U.S. to maintain a consistent foreign policy. Against the backdrop of the ongoing issues, the uncertainty and frequent change in U.S. foreign policy has brought huge policy risks to all European countries, as most of them tend to depend on the U.S. for security. As the Ukraine crisis remarkably impacts the security framework of Europe, it is normal to see European countries express concern over the U.S. potential move to reduce its support to Ukraine. The Ukraine crisis provoked by the United States has heavily undermined the European countries, with the Eurozone's inflation rate hitting a record high and the energy crisis getting worse. As winter is just around the corner, many European countries are now worrying about heating. If the U.S. remarkably cuts its aid to Ukraine, Europe will undoubtedly have to bear more. The U.S. has entrapped its allies or made them suffer heavy losses, especially European ones, many times. The rift between the U.S. and Europe and the U.S. crises of confidence among European countries have already been there. The U.S.-Europe divisions and disputes will become increasingly apparent due to U.S. policy inconsistency. After the midterm elections, if the U.S. does drastically cut support to Ukraine, it is believed that the rift will further widen and the crisis of the confidence will further deepen. Europe still needs to maintain independence and autonomy and cannot rely too much on the U.S. regime. Heavy reliance on the U.S. in policy means disaster for Europe. And independence will bring the possibility of a benign future for Europe. And as the U.S. continues its efforts to prolong the crisis in Eastern Europe, the European continent faces the grim prospect of deindustrialization and deep recession. The question that comes to mind is that why should European households pay for a conflict which is instigated by the U.S. regime? In this regard, Global Times wrote, deindustrialization, which has been hotly discussed in Europe recently, overshadows the efforts of Western developed countries to rebuild their industrialization. Deindustrialization is not new in Western countries. Since 1970s, industries in Europe and the U.S. have been moving out of their countries for comprehensive issues. But the newest wave of deindustrialization Europe is facing this time is largely influenced by a single effect, that is rising energy prices and imported inflation, further exposing all old problems that already existed. Now, electricity and gas prices have soared because of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. In an open letter to EU leaders, including Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, European Industry Association, Eurometo, raised the alarm about Europe's escalating energy crisis posing an existential threat to industry, calling on EU and member states and leaders to take emergency action to preserve their strategic electricity-intensive industries and prevent permanent job losses. Growing costs will cause a lack of industrial raw materials in Europe, including metals. Together with soaring energy prices, as well as the rise in import prices due to the devaluation of the euro, the decline of profit margins will bring troubles to both the enterprises and the broader manufacturing industry. As a result, the effects of Russia-Ukraine crisis are another burden on Europe's unresolved problem of past deindustrialization. Of course, decision-making errors also contribute to the current energy shortage in Europe, with some countries having put forward radical energy transition goals, including the decision to phase out nuclear power, the negative impact of which has just been catalyzed by the crisis in Ukraine. According to Forbes, with natural gas prices over $100 more per megawatt hour than they were a year ago, the Western European economies are heading to the Middle Ages. Forests are being cut for firewood as Russia retaliates with its own Ukraine crisis sanctions by shutting off the trickle of natural gas it was still piping into Europe. Germany watching companies suffer high electricity bills. ArcelorMittal is closing two steel mills there, is finally talking about decoupling with China. The energy crisis is making them nervous. They want to make it harder for manufacturers to outsource now that their energy bill is at an all-time high. This no longer looks like a short-term crisis. Stories from Western Europe are like stories one once had in countries like Bolivia. High inflation and resource rations imposed by the state. Corporate investment goes where money goes farthest. It used to be taxes and labor and environmental costs they looked at. Now European companies will add electricity to the mix. None of this bodes well for European businesses. Brexit didn't shield Britain from Europe's policy errors. Germany is signing long-term contracts for US LNG to save itself, though it will have to find a place to put it all. For this reason, they will have to build new terminals to handle those shipments quickly. But these actions should have been done years ago, or at least set in place before the Russian sanctions were announced. Europe had no ace up its sleeves.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us reflect on a wonderful maxim from Imam Hassan Askari, peace be upon him, the 11th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The wine drinker is like an idolater for his disobedience of God.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, knowing the laws of leaking secrets. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the ways of keeping secret, but from the perspective of knowing the laws of leaking secrets. And obviously, when we see the Islamic teachings, we see that Islam gives importance to the secrets that we have, and therefore it does not allow us to leak other secrets. But one of the ways why the people are obviously they don't care about the secrets of the others or others' personal life, it is because they are unaware. They're not acknowledged about that. And one of the ways is to know the danger, to know the loss that is waiting for us or for the community or for the others if we leak secrets, if people start leaking the secrets of each other, if people start backbiting each other, what will happen? The first thing that happens is that the society will no more be secure. It brings insecurity in the society. It brings insecurity amongst the friends, between the family members, among the family members. So no one will feel secure while sharing his feelings, his things, or maybe if he has a problem, even if it is not a secret. But obviously, at this point, he does not want to share it. He does not want others to know such thing. The people will not share things. The people will not ask or for the advice if they feel that the others will not keep their secrets or the things that they are sharing. So the first thing that a society or people in their relations they will face is having insecurity amongst them. Therefore, we need to keep secret and we should know about the danger of leaking secrets. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the ways of keeping secrets, and we said that one of the ways of keeping secret is to know about the danger and the loss of leaking secrets. So the first thing that generally a society face is that everyone will feel insecure, and the society will become insecure if people are not keeping the secrets of each other. The second thing is that we become captive and we become imprisoned of the secrets. As Imam Ali alayhi salam has said that when you have a secret, this secret is your captive, or you have made something imprisoned in your custody. It's in your custody. But if the secret has been leaked out, then obviously we'll become the captive of this secret. We will become the prisoner of this secret, because once we have imprisoned the secret, we had it in our heart, we shared it with others to keep it. But once it has been leaked, then now we have no secret, and obviously everyone know about us. So this is what Imam has said. Therefore, one of the consequences, one of the dangers, it brings the insecurity. Number two, it makes you a prisoner if it is leaked. Therefore, we can see in the history there were many things, there were many secrets, or maybe there were highly secure things which should not be leaked. But when they were leaked, obviously the other countries they conquered, maybe like they invaded the other countries because of knowing their secrets. So this is important that we should know about the consequences and the danger of leaking secrets. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
They're back as India has released several of them into the grasslands of Kuna National Park after a 70-year absence in the country. The 8 radio-coloured African cheetahs made the long journey from Namibia. The big cats were released during a ceremony by Prime Minister Narendra Modi that coincided with his birthday. After their acclimation in the national park, they will be released into a 5-hectare spread of land in central India, covered by grassland and forest. The felines will share the landscape with other animals and roam with leopards, sloths and striped hyenas. Their reintroduction is the culmination of a 13-year effort to restore the species, which vanished from the country decades ago. Another 12 cheetahs are expected to join the fledgling Indian population next month from South Africa. With more funding, the country hopes to gradually increase the population of cheetahs to around 40.
Many people of the world are supported almost completely by animals because they live in areas unsuitable for animal husbandry. But these days, even some city dwellers are making their living out of animals, like a Virginia girl. Andrea Diaz quit her job at a restaurant and started to rent her pet alpacas to cheer up steer crazy Americans during the pandemic. Since the launch of her business in 2020, it has expanded from 2 to 14 alpacas. Interestingly, five with fluffy pets are regularly making a paid appearance at birthdays, weddings, restaurants, and offices. She charges a starting price of $95 per hour. Diaz says the best part is when there are kids' birthday parties, but even it's really a fun for the adults. She calls alpacas a good exposure because they attract people. If you enjoy street art, then you'll probably like Iztapalapa district in Mexico's capital city. Nearly 300 neighborhoods in this area are beautifully painted with brightly colored murals for all to enjoy. Visitors can also ride a cable car and take a tour of the art from above. The district is home to nearly 7,000 murals and graffiti painted on all sorts of surfaces, including rooftops. Iztapalapa Murals is a project that was promoted by the Mexico City's mayor in 2018. The goal of the project was to recover and dignify public spaces through art and involve neighbors in its creation and conservation. Iztapalapa is one of the poorest municipalities in the capital, and the initiative aims to reduce neighborhood violence through public lighting of the murals during the night.
It is never too late to learn a new skill. That's what 100-year-old Nada Rudan has shown with her art when she discovered her love for painting at the age of 87. The Bosnian native says she started to paint to keep herself busy, and now she finds the days are often too short to fit in everything she wanted to do. The artist paints for 3 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon without glasses. Rudan marked her 100th birthday with an exhibition of all the works that she has painted over the years.
My 100th birthday, I've celebrated it at sea. That was really a big event for me. Before that, I had an exhibition that I didn't hope for. But my children persuaded me. I was against it. I'm not an artist, I said. Children, don't embarrass me.
She says she's inspired by nature and her travel around the globe. Rudan has lived in numerous areas such as Central America, Hawaii Islands, Europe, and the Asian Himalayas, among many other places. The artist survived both World War II and the siege of Sarajevo by Bosnian Serb forces. Iran's Kish Island is known as the paradise of the Persian Gulf. Our correspondent Youssef Jalali has been to the stunning southern Iranian resort island and has filed this report about its beautiful attractions.
Snowland at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. This snow town is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some 3 decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists. While U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai, the island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on two major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Yusuf Jalali from Kish Island.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A 78-year-old artist is making a comeback with a unique art installation on Governor's Island in the United States of America. One of its biggest features is the sound and creaking of moving chains.
It's a project that I proposed for a commission in St. Louis. The site of the commission was the area near the Mississippi River and the St. Louis courthouse. So I wanted to do a piece that addressed those areas and, you know, the subjects. And and of course we have in those areas the Mississippi River, which is a place that you talk about the history of American commerce, but also we can talk about the history of slavery.
Charles Gaines wanted to highlight the role slavery played in building the economy of the United States. That's why he purposely used chains, and the sculptor pointedly faces the Statue of Liberty in New York City. The installation is roughly 30 meters long and activated by colossal chains that rotate on anchors. The installation is part of a three-chapter series called The American Manifest, Moving Chains. It will be kept for all to see until the summer of next year.
A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out three patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
If you have a sweet tooth, then this next bit of news is just for you. Visitors are now taking advantage of the expanded version of Cakeland, which is an immersive art gallery in the U.S. city of Los Angeles. The structure is meant to feel like a giant multi-layered cake. It's entirely made of artificial materials, but looks like if it's full of cherries, whipped cream, and layers of cake. Artist Scott Hoff says he used nearly a ton of pipe frosting, 120 mirrors, and thousands of cherries. Plus, he embedded thousands of crystals in the walls as a final touch. The artist says he chose to develop cake land after he noticed how much his artificial cake sculptures were welcomed by viewers.
So I chose cake because, number one, it's really beautiful. Number two, it's really fun to do. And number three, it engages the viewers in such a meaningful way.
Hoff says he never actually made a real cake before and has mainly followed his enthusiasm for fake food as the inspiration for this project. Visitors are able to walk through the cake, a labyrinth, and explore various rooms. While there is a lot of deliciousness and lightness of the cakes, visitors to this cake land can discover some interesting darker elements as they wander around. The art installation has continued to expand since it was founded by Hov in 2020. Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. It takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to offload. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants.
Freedom is an essential virtue that is valued not only by humans but animals as well, just like two eagle owls that have been released into the wild after being born in a Madrid zoo. The two owl twins were freed after months of training to survive in the nature. First, they were taken to a big aviary to develop the necessary skills, including those for hunting prey. The aviary is designed to have a similar environment to the local mountain range. Meantime, they need to gain muscle and come to a suitable weight. After passing various skill tests, the owls are released as part of Madrid Zoo's breeding program of night birds of prey. 7 eagle owls and 11 barn owls have been released since the program was launched in 2017. However, some of them flew back seeking shelter as they failed to adapt to the nature.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
The Western world claims to practice freedom of expression while it is proved that this motto is just a lie. When it comes to Palestinians and the issue of resistance, freedom of expression is widely restricted. This is evidently seen today by the actions of Facebook and Instagram in violating the rights of Palestinians during the Gaza war. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. The website of Middle East Eye wrote, Facebook and Instagram's policies during Israeli regime attacks on Gaza last year harmed the fundamental human rights of Palestinians, according to a report commissioned by the platform's parent company Meta. The study, which was carried out by a consultancy business for social responsibility, BSR, was obtained by The Intercept ahead of its publication recently. In May 2021, Meta was widely accused of censorship and bias during Israeli regime's assault on Gaza, which killed 256 Palestinians, including 66 children. Meta's actions in May 2021 appear to have had an adverse human rights impact on the rights of Palestinian users to freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, political participation, and non-discrimination, and therefore on the ability of Palestinians to share information and insights about their experiences as they occurred, the report said. Middle East Eye reported last year that concerns had been raised about deleted social media content and account suspensions in relation to Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in occupied East Al-Quds, where an Israeli crackdown on protests against forcible evictions sparked escalation in violence. According to the report, Meta deleted Arabic content related to last year's violence at a much greater rate than Hebrew language posts. This was found among posts reviewed by both automated services and employees. BSR attributed the difference in treatment to a lack of expertise. It concluded that Meta lacked staff who understood other cultures, languages, and histories, despite having over 70,000 employees and $24 billion in cash reserves. Potentially violating Arabic content may not have been routed to content reviewers who speak or understand the specific dialect of the content, the reporter stated. During the outbreak of violence, Palestinian and Arab social media users revived an old Arabic font in an attempt to beat Facebook's algorithm and express their support for Palestine. The BSR report fell short of accusing Meta of deliberate bias, pointing instead to unintentional bias leading to different human rights impacts on Palestinian and Arab-speaking users. It found that Meta's dangerous individuals and organizations policy referred to in the report as DOI, which prevents its users from praising or representing a number of groups, focused mainly on Muslim entities and therefore disproportionately impacted Palestinians. It said, Meta's DOI policy and the list are more likely to impact Palestinian and Arabic-speaking users, both based upon Meta's interpretation of legal obligations. Palestinians are more likely to violate Meta's DOI policy because of the presence of Hamas as a governing entity in Gaza and political candidates affiliated with designated organizations, the report said. The study concluded with 21 non-binding recommendations, which included increasing staff capacity to analyze Arabic posts and reforming the dangerous individuals and organizations policy. Meta vaguely committed to implementing 20 of the recommendations, according to Intercept. The company did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Its response to the report will be included when the document is published in full. In a footnote to the response seen by the Intercept, it said Meta's publication of this response should